It's punk rock bowling time. That's right, for the 24th year, one of the greatest festivals on earth, in my opinion, returns to downtown Las Vegas the weekend of May 25th, 26th, and 27th. I have had some of my greatest times playing this thing and just hanging out at this thing. You want to know how much this festival speaks to Turnout of Punk's mindset? The headliners are Devo, Descendants, and Madness. Every day of this festival, the lineup is stacked with amazing bands of all types and stripes of punk and hardcore from all different eras, from ska to post-hardcore. We're talking like Bratmobile to Rock from the Crypt to Stiff Little Fingers to the Cosmic Psychos to Scowl to Chad. And then there's also all these late night after shows which are happening, and you wouldn't believe the lineup of these things, from the Zeros to Agnostic Front, and everything in between. This festival is out of control for fans of punk. So I hope I will see you there, because this isn't like some sort of festival that you just go to and the bands are secluded in some sort of backstage area. Bands and fans and just punks alike are all just taking over downtown Las Vegas. So you turn around and all of a sudden you're gambling beside John Doe from X. I don't know if John Doe gambles, but if you turn around on the buffet line, you'll probably see me. And you better believe we're going to be talking about punk music. And because this festival loves this podcast as much as this podcast loves this festival, Punk Rock Bowling is bringing you a series of special episodes. So each and every week, I will have an episode going up featuring someone that's playing this festival. And hot damn, are there some good ones coming. Head over to punkrockbowling.com and hopefully I see you in downtown Las Vegas, May 25th, 26th, and 20. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Turned Out of Punk. I'm your host, Damien Abraham. Once again, I'm bringing you a conversation with someone who grew up listening to punk, may or may not still be involved with punk, but had a life changed by the genre in a major way. And today on the show, not one, but two amazing guests from the band Gossip. Beth Ditto and Nathan Houdeshell are on the show today, and this is an awesome one. More on that in 1 second, but first, if you'd like to get in touch with me, head over to the email address, turnedoutofpunkpodcast@gmail.com. That is run by my brother and show producer and guest booker extraordinaire, Tristan Abraham, and he will get the message to me. Thank you, Tristan, for all the hard work you do. You can find me on Twitter or Instagram at LeftForDamien. There is a Instagram page, a YouTube page, a TikTok page, and a Facebook page, all for Turned Out of Punk. All those can be found at Turned Out of Punk on their respective platforms. If you want to support the show, tell all your friends about it. Let them all know that you enjoy this podcast. You can also check out the band I play in. We are called Fucked Up. More information can be found at fuckedup.cc. We have new records and shows that are going to be announced and all sorts of stuff. The work never ceases over at Fucked Up HQ. So go over there and check out some stuff if you will. All right, on to today's show. Today on the show, as I said off the top, it's an amazing episode. From the legends, Gossip, Nathan and Beth are on the show today. And I first met them way back when through Judd from Sexvid. Judd, the lead singer of the, I guess, legendary hardcore band as well, Sexvid, was formerly the manager of the Gossip. And when he became friends with Mike from Fucked Up, when the Gossip came through town, he's like, I want Fucked Up to open the show. So we opened the show, bummed out a lot of people that day, but Nathan was super awesome and came up and was really supportive of our band, and Beth as well, too. So catching up with them all these years later, well, first of all, I was blown away that Nathan remembered so much about the show, but also it's cool to see, I guess, where we all have gone, but certainly where the Gossip have gone and kind of the place they occupy in music. Like, I really do look upon this band as being a kind of watershed moment and a real change that kind of happened, not just in mainstream music, because they, of course, kind of broke through to that whole world and stuff, but I mean, also on an underground level, like we talk about it on the show, so I'm not going to, you know, force you to have to listen to it twice. The Gossip do have a brand new fantastic record, which you can pick up. I guess it's available everywhere now. Real Power is the name of this thing, and it's on Sony, and it's the first record The Gossip have put out in like 11 years. So they are going to be going on tour. You can find out all those tour dates online now. I believe so far it's mainly the European stuff that's been announced, but I'm sure there's going to be North American dates to follow. And if you have never seen The Gossip live, they are one of the all-time great live bands, an incredible force to witness in person. This is a real fun episode to get to do. Nathan jumps on it again. We were supposed to do a second part, but Beth couldn't come on, so just Nathan's on for the second part. But you'll hear it towards the end of the show. You'll hear it. It kind of gets explained. Also, pick up everything that you can find on Fast Weapons, the label that Nathan did. A lot of good stuff. We talk about it all. Not all of it. There's a lot of good stuff on this label. We talk about a bunch of it in a second. So at the risk of being redundant, just check out stuff on Fast Weapons. Check out stuff Nathan's going to be putting out on his new label as well, which we talk about in a second. And that's it. I'm not going to ramble on anymore. Sit back, relax, and enjoy Beth and Nathan from The Gossip on Turned Out a Punk.
Damien, I wasn't kidding. You've got to record the whole time. You're going to miss the best stuff.
Oh, he just started, so we're good.
Now we're good. Nathan, now we're on.
You don't need, hey, Nathan, he didn't need you in his corner. He's grown, all right? Why don't you calm down?
You're right.
You look nice. Did you get some good sleep?
I did.
I got
good.
Well, let's get started. I am very excited to have both of you on this podcast because, as we've been talking about off air, we have a common connection in the fact that I have opened for your band. I'm a huge fan of your band.
That's an injustice.
Well, no, believe me, it was great. It was wild opening for you back then, where we were both at in our careers, and then watching everywhere you've gone since then in your careers. It's kind of humbling, like being like, wow, we're still on this journey together, but
I'm talking to punks. You know?
Well, I know. Yes. Yeah, exactly. It's refreshing.
But like, just people who have been playing, you know, it takes all kinds, really. Don't want to leave anybody out. Not just,
I don't,
you know.
Like, I don't like jazz guys.
I tell you what, I do not like indie singer-songwriter stuff. I don't like in this conversation. No, I know. But, you know, it isn't just punks. But that's why it is nice to talk to people who've been, who get it, I think, you know, not like get it, man, but don't get it. Like, I don't have like a cigarette and a bra on, but I will later. But like, I don't, that people that have been in the scene and they've done all these different things and they know what it's, you know what I mean? It's so, sometimes explaining it to people, you'll be like, yeah, never mind. You know, but like, not in a mean way, but in that way where you're just, it just not, I guess what I'm saying is it's just nice to talk to somebody who knows what we're talking about. Because when you say that, like, just being around and like seeing us grow up and stuff together and how we're all still doing it, like, it's, you know, you have kids and like, you know, Kathy, who used to be in Gossip, has kids. In fact, she's right next door right now. She's on vacation in New York while we're here, and her daughter's here, and it's so fun.
Kathy's very fun.
Well, I feel like that we were talking, Nathan and I were talking about it off air, that this is like one of the great unifiers, I think, with interesting people. And I actually heard you talk about it on a fashion podcast that you did.
Nathan, you heard Nathan talk about it?
No, Beth, you're talking about it too with fashion designers, how every fashion designer you meet who's cool has some sort of like punk connection in some way.
Yes. Or dance connection or like subculture. Yeah.
Vivian Westwood, hello, the queen of funk. Okay.
She is the queen of funk. And I mean, you meet people like Jean-Paul Gaultier, like how he didn't have any fashion background. He's one of my favorite stories, not only because he's a very, very kind person, but like he was back in the, you know, in the 70s and 80s, you know, Yves Saint Laurent was an out gay man in fashion, and that just was not fucking done. And so like when in the 70s or whatever, 80s, I can't remember what decade, but one of my favorite stories ever is Gaultier being like, you know, he didn't have training. He didn't know how to sew really, barely, is that he would sketch ideas and send them directly to Yves Saint Laurent, like the person, and be like, I'm such a fan. And like, also coming at it from the idea of being, I'm such a fan of what you do. Like, and then seeing them, can you imagine just like being YSL and seeing Gaultier become who Gaultier did and being like, that's what you do it for. You know what I mean?
That's like sending your demo tape to Kill Rock Stars. That's the same concept.
Yeah, it's like that. Because they had respect for them and being like, I just, you know, and I don't know. Sorry, I'm getting,
same thing,
please, Damien, don't feel offended, but I'm also getting ready for the day while I do this. Is that okay with you?
No, absolutely. That's totally fine. And
in fact, if you want to follow along, go get your makeup. We can do it together.
We
can turn that upside down. Your beard can be your bouffant.
Yeah, I feel like I have a hard enough time cleaning my glasses, let alone putting anything on my eyes.
Put the makeup on your glasses.
Paint it on. There we go.
Sorry, I won't interrupt anymore, but
no.
About the fashion thing, that's how I feel about it. It's like, it's, you're, to like put a, to just get to put a bow on it or whatever the fuck they say. Like, you know, people are like, well, how do you even deal with it? Especially about fashion and size. And I'm like, well, for one, I learned that, like, I didn't know what the fuck I was talking about because I thought I was this young punk or whatever. And like, people always bitch about the fashion industry, as they should. They fucking should. But, and then, you know, music, you know, major labels and stuff like that, even indie labels.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know, and then you're like, but you know what? When I'm in that group of people, I'm literally surrounded by the most actual, honest to God, fucking eccentrics, queer, mostly women people who are just like out of their minds in the best way. Are they all nice? No. But have you ever been to a punk show? God damn. The first time I went to a show, I was like, I'm not kidding. Like, to a show outside of Arkansas where we were from, I was like, what's wrong with everybody? Like, why is anybody smiling? Like, why is there anybody like talking to you? You know, it was very, I get it now because, you know, it's just a cultural difference. But, you know, like I felt, you know, I could feel just as easily ostracized or like made to feel like a big dumb animal in punk scene. Then, you know, I didn't know about a lot of records. I thought, oh my God, here's a story I'll tell you later, is once I actually thought I met Morrissey for real in Olympia. And I'll tell you that story later if we have time. Go ahead. That's how little I knew about like the Smiths and shit.
Oh,
I was,
remember
20.
How you, the other night you said you heard the Wipers. You're like, this is a Nirvana ripoff.
No, remember when you were in the car? No, I swear to God, these are my two favorite stories. First of all, that's one of my favorite things. It was Judd. We were on tour. Judd was our tour manager. So Judd was driving. You were sitting shotgun, me and Kathy and somebody else was in the back. I mean, maybe Bronwyn or somebody. And then I remember that one of y'all put on the Wipers. And I was like, I didn't say it out loud, but I was like, who the fuck is this Nirvana ripoff band? And not saying out loud, but just trying to figure it out.
Oh my God, that's so funny.
Nirvana, and then being like, no, this is the Wipers. And I was like, oh.
But that's awesome. Cause like, I feel like, you know, you said the quiet part out loud by noticing that, which is like, yeah, Nirvana did rip off the Wipers.
Yes, they did.
Yeah.
Or say, you know what I always think is like, people are like, because I do love Nirvana. I do think, I mean, I do. I mean,
Nirvana's amazing.
You have, you know, how they changed everything was, you know, it's invaluable to people. Like, I think like me and Nathan has a different experience with, like, he had a cousin who was more in touch with like New Sonic Youth, but right, like,
yeah, but I did have a cousin who was punk for a moment, and
yeah,
and then he got punk into like
my podcast.
He had like, and then he got into like, you know, like bass car culture, like blasted Too Short, and I would sit in the truck and then like I would have like a headache from the Too Short blasting.
Nathan, they're called Crank It Ups, and my brother won.
Yeah, Crank It Ups. Yes, Crank It Ups. That was the
my brother Benny Ditto and my dad won third place in Crank It Ups. I just want to say
amazing, incredible, and great.
It was cool.
It's like a dub sound system in a fucking shitty Arkansas vehicle.
It's called a subwoofer.
Yeah,
it's called a subwoofer, and that my brother, I'm not joking, invented the honeycomb design that went into the back of like small sedans.
That's incredible.
That's amazing.
Well, I mean, it wasn't patented, but like I remember he went to the Crank It Up one year and it had invented this honeycomb speaker design, and then the next year you could buy them. Which is all Crank It Ups are, I think. It's like places to get people together where they're making these incredible, this incredible sound shit. And then, you know, people, manufacturers figure it out. You know how the man works.
And yeah, it's the Arkansas version of like a dub sound system sound clash event. It's crazy. Inside of a fucking shitty truck. Hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah. Mazda. My dad was in, my dad did it. My mom and dad did it. My mom and dad. I wish it was my dad. My mom too. My dad and my brother did it a few years in a row. And they always, it was in the shittiest fucking Mazda every year. I remember once it didn't go in reverse.
And but they had my dad took speakers. Us through a
flood. My dad drove us through the flood in this fucking Mazda. Four kids.
Amazing.
The water was coming. It didn't go in reverse. I was like, well, hell, I hope it loops around at some point because we are going to die, Dad.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Now this is like me thinking about demolition derbies, but we should keep talking about music, I guess.
Well, go on, Zora. Let me cut you off.
No, please. You're going to have to, for one, you're going to have to cut me off. You're going to have to.
Well,
if you want any information.
Well, I find this stuff fascinating too. And I do find that that's like a natural thing that kind of happened post Nirvana, Green Day flare up, that there were like a lot of kids that got on board that were on board for like a hot minute. And
yeah,
these flare ups are like,
they became jocks again, like a year later.
Exactly. Like, and I think here they got into the Tragically Hip, which is a very Canadian only thing, but
heard of Tragically Hip, and it always made me think of,
I don't know. I don't think I've even heard that band.
It made me think of an honest to God hurt hip.
I think they were like never really popular in America. Huge stadium band here.
You had hair when we were kids.
I had care. I had a little bit of hair.
But and a little beard. You didn't have a beard.
I didn't have a beard.
I remember you now.
I feel like there's a
like thinner.
I think I might have been. Well, it depends when you saw me. I was definitely heavier and thinner at different times. But
I'm really. Oh, I'm telling you.
But their band was really, really good. We played them in Toronto, and I think you talked to the gal that played bass for them that night,
Sandy.
Sandy.
Yeah, Sandy. Mm-hmm. We're all still in the band together. We were one of those.
Yeah.
Bands.
You are?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, we had another guitar player for a minute, but now we're back to sort of the original five of us. And it's,
how does that feel?
God, it's weird. It's weird to be like kind of I describe it as like a middle class band. And I heard you describe upper middle class is your current economic situation. I feel like being a middle class band.
Honey, that is country rich, baby.
I feel like that's the thing, though. It's like this weird moment in music that kind of exists post-Nirvana. There's a little bit with, like, you look at Husker Du and the Replacements and sort of this push REM, but, like, push towards it. But, like, this idea that you could be not a pop star and yet make it as a band that kind of, like, works to pay the rent.
All of the, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, you go ahead. No, please, go ahead.
I was just thinking, like, for me, the moment that I realized you could do that was when we went on tour with Sleater-Kinney. And I always say to people, like, because, you know, Nathan and Kathy and Jerry are friends. And there are a few other kids that are awesome and great too that we still talk to. From, you know, Cersei. I'm from Jensonia. So let's get that clear. Just because once someone, a Jensonia kid, was like, why do you always say you're from Cersei? And I was like, I don't, you know what? You're right. I'm not. but it, because back, you know, down there, it's a different vibe. Cersei's more hoity-toity. But that what it was for me was, like, I didn't, you know, when I moved to Olympia, the amount of knowledge I had about punk rock music, one, is what I think made Gossip a little different, you know, not like we were like, whoa, this is an outrageous band, nobody's ever heard this before, but like because, you know, like I was only 18 And I'd only met them around 13, 14, and really started hanging out with them around, well, Nathan, mostly when I was about 15. So, like, we didn't go to school together. We, you know, like, we didn't live in the same town. I never had a telephone. You know, we couldn't keep a phone on. So, like, my connection to them was different. So I was listening to, like, different stuff. You know, I had, but anyway, so it was just different. So I didn't have as much knowledge of what Olympia was going to be like. I didn't know the entire backstory. I didn't know, you know, like, I remember being at, here's an example of how little I knew. Jerry and I were at a party, and, you know, Jerry was making a joke because, like, whatever. And he was like, dude, this party's so cool. I heard Kurt Cobain be here. And Toby overheard that and naturally was like,
oh, wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah. And, like, said that to Nathan, actually, was like, your friends, like, is, like, talking about how, like, we don't, you know, should, like, we don't know who we're talking, you know, we don't know where we are. And it wasn't rude. It was just like, they should be not, I don't know what she said, but basically be like, that was someone's friend here. You know, people knew him here. And to that point.
Yeah. Toby dated him.
Yes. And I, but I didn't think of anything beyond Kurt Cobain from Nirvana. You know, I didn't know the whole story, which is one thing that was cool about living in Olympia for me, is that I got to learn as I went. I didn't go with this, like, this knowledge. You know, I thought Kill Rock Stars was a tape distro, like Nathan's, what, you know, Nathan's bedroom label was. I swear to God in my mother's life, I did. I didn't know anybody, any other scene was different than what our little scene was. I had no idea because I wasn't connected in the same way. And, like, you know, I had a different kind of life, like, just a different life. And, you know, I was raised in a big family with a lot of kids. I took care of a lot of people. Like, that was my thing. I didn't have a lot of time to, like, do other stuff. Like, people are always like, remember my so-called life? I'm like, yeah, a couple episodes. I was obsessed with it, but I never got to watch it because I didn't have time. I had other shit to do, you know? Like, those kinds of pop culture references, and especially punk rock references, like, I didn't know how big bands were and stuff. So what I'm trying to say is, like, it wasn't until, I mean, Sledgehammer was a big deal to me because I loved their music, and I was starting to learn that that people thought it was a big deal, and, you know, people were like, oh my God, you're going on tour with Sledgehammer. I was like, I know, isn't that cool? And then when we finally got to the first show, and they took us on 6 weeks, which is crazy. I mean, you got to understand, I had only been on an airplane once. Probably, Nathan, you'd only been on an airplane once at that time, like, flying to the North. Yeah, I think Kathy had been on one twice. We had never been anywhere. I'd never been anywhere outside the South until I landed in the Northwest. We drove through, you know, Idaho, Montana, blah, blah, blah. We get to our first show is Minneapolis. We're playing not 7th Street Entry, the punk version, the small one, right? So we were doing First Avenue. And that moment, I remember seeing how big it was, like, just the venue, and saying, oh, this is different than I thought. You know, I did not know. And I feel like sometimes when I first moved to Olympia, people would think, number one, thought my, they would be like, is your accent real? I was like, number one, what accent? Two, what? Like, what do you mean? Of course it is. Like, it never dawned on me to fake anything, or, like, you know, it never dawned on me to do that. So, like, I didn't know that you could make money and make music, even though I have a whole backstory about that too, with, like, my brother played drums with my cousin's band, and they would on tour with, like, Little Richard and shit like that, and doing the Tunica, like, gambling circuit and stuff, riverboat gambling. And so, yeah, he made money, but not, like, you know, he was a teenager. I didn't know. And so I remember Nathan coming out. I think our guarantee was $100, and there were three of us in the band, and Nathan handing us all $30 after we got paid and saying, we would never have made this in an 8-hour shift at Subway. And maybe I'm like, oh my God, you're right. $30.
Yeah.
But being completely like, oh my God, you're right. Like, this is a full day of work at a fast food restaurant. Like, that was so, and I was like, oh my God, people do this? And then this, you know, go into more and more places, and, like these sold out venues. And yeah, some of them were like 15, like, still to this day, people will be like, it's only 1500 capacity. I'm like, motherfucker, my town's only 1900. What, like, what are you talking about? Like, it yes. still feels like that way to me. Like, I like, that's the thing that never goes away. But that was when, like, you know, I did not realize how that there was a whole subculture of people playing music, making a living, because you are taught that if you're not, you know, when you grow up, you think if you're not a pop star or whatever, that's only two ways to be famous, you know, or like whatever the fucking word is. Like, you think, you see people in magazines and you think they're in limousines, and they weren't, you know. I think that was the thing. Please go on. I'm gonna flat iron this out of my hair.
Well, the trajectory you guys had and the impact you had from the sort of like underground world. I was trying to think about it today. Was it Punk Planner or Maximum Rock and Roll, which I think you were on the cover of, maybe even, and had a big piece on you, and the impact you had on that world, and then just kind of like the ascent was, which was over like a really short period of time, is wild. And like, I obviously want to get to that, but
what does ascent mean? Is it like up?
Yeah. Up,
ascent.
Yeah.
Okay.
Up, yeah. Up. Cause like, I feel, and I want to get to that, but I kind of am fascinated because, like you said, Beth, you had a different entry point to this. When was the first time you guys came across punk? I guess, Nathan, do you remember the first time you ever came across it?
Well, I know that when I was young, I had this cousin, and he had like one of those.
You're cranking a cousin.
Yeah, who had, you know those Rhino Records tape compilations that came out that were like, yes. Los Angeles punk, and it had like X and the Germs on it. And I remember hearing that, and that just blew my mind. And from there, and I was also, I was like a skate rat. So I used to go to this place called Fred's, and I bought an issue of Thrasher magazine, and it was just over after that.
Fred's.
You know, like, they had like a feature on the Frumpies and the Notes from the Underground section. And like, I remember reading about, and they had like, and I started writing people. I was writing, you know, I lived on a farm in this town and didn't have a lot of friends. And so I started writing. I looked for the pen pals thing and found mixtapes through that way, and was sending tapes all over to people, and people were sending me tapes, and it skyrocketed from there, you know. But I went into the like pen pal sections, and like, yeah, I'm interested in punk. Want to trade me a tape? And so I was always writing letters, and that's how I, you know, that's it. It went off the rails since then.
One of my very favorite stories is when I heard a few years after we'd moved to Olympia, and I was talking to Maggie and Toby Vale, you know, the sisters, and Toby was working at the mailroom at Kill Rock Stars, and Maggie was doing, I don't remember what her job was. She had like an office job at Kill Rock Stars at the time. And she's just telling me, she's like, when we first met Nathan face to face, we literally said, oh, you're Nathan. Because he was always, you know, buying whatever, or like sending letters or asking for things. And like, I just remember thinking that was the sweetest story. Like,
I would save my, I would like, lunch money. Okay. Save a few days, order a 7-inch. And I was always, writing Kill Rock Stars, and I was a big mail order kid, you know?
It was weird because you had things like that Los Angeles punk comp show up on Columbia House, and then all of a sudden had access to this thing, which had some killer shit on it, that LA punk.
Totally. The Zeros, Germs, and like, crazy that you could get that shit, and you could find that at like Hastings and Walmart in Arkansas. I remember I found in the dollar bin. I specifically remember being really young and finding the Velvet Underground Andy Warhol tape, and it was a cutout, you know, and it was like 50 cents, and I thought it looked cool. And I listened to European Death Angel song, and it scared me for days. I like took the tape out. I was like, what is this terrifying music?
Mama, you can have a house.
I was like, oh God, it was like my first exposure to, I guess, what would be like improvisational noise, which I love now. But at the time, I was just like, what is this? And, you know, there was, all you had was the tape cover and maybe a Xerox picture of the band. It's not like now, you know, every fucking band's life story on Instagram reels. So the mystery and the allure of it all was like fascinating. You know, it's like, who are these people? Why are they making this? I've got just the sheep. Maybe there's a picture of them on the inside. You have the lyrics and the tape cover, and that's all you know. Mm-hmm. You know?
And the beauty, I think, too, of that, like what you're saying, like how much, like that is all you had, and how much you had to rely on your imagination.
Yes, me, to fill in the blanks.
Well, what was incredible about that time, and I think probably for a lot of people in a lot of scenes and stuff, and it's still got to be like this for people around the world in different ways. It's like, you know, I feel like one thing that was so funny about this little scene that Nathan had created, and Kathy and Jerry and our friend Mark, a lot of other, you know, a few other kids, was that to me, it was theirs and our interpretation of what we thought a scene would look like. So it was like you had these very, very
mutants.
Yeah, you had very minimal reference points. And so you built on those. And so it looked fucking crazy. You know, like we, you know, had a few, but also you didn't have money. It was harder to get. You had to wait for it in the mail, you know. And like, so, you know, like that kind of idea. And so your imagination just had to run wild. And you were like, what does this look like? What would I imagine if it was like, if I was there, you know? And like, that is so fucking incredible. That's the thing that that sometimes I think, you know, is hard about having access to every single image. If you want to see somebody hanging out with somebody on a street or whatever, you know, you had to have the magazine, you had to have the book. And in order to have that shit, you had to have money. So you had to like really reach into your brain and be like, okay, this is what I think this is. And boy, did we get it wrong sometimes, but it was incredible. I mean, like we had a friend named Jerry who was this techie kid. He loved techno and stuff. And like, he was like into Atari Teenage Riot and shit like that. And like the way he looked at school was not like any like hip kid. It didn't look like the 90s. He would draw with Sharpie and like circuit boards on his arms. And like, you know, like he was amazing. And the thing is like when you look back at it now, that what's so fucked up is when you did move to a scene and you did move and you did see what it was like, and there were so many like I don't know, like how do you know, ways to be cool, and there were things you did and things you didn't do, and then you learned the phrase like why be normal, or you learned different variations.
I recently had an experience like that in Arkansas. Yeah, you know, yeah, I drive around Arkansas sometimes
hang out with,
and
you know,
try to find shows and
Krusty's didn't hang out with this, you know, like
and bands,
you know,
and
hippies didn't hang out with punks. And like where we were from, if you were weird,
I drove
you
to this town
to
called Batesville, and there was a punk show at this barn.
Yeah.
And I saw the fucking best band I've seen in years. They covered Rebel Girl. And I was there with like, and it was a guy in a fucking Dr. Seuss hat and a ska guy and like a hippie.
So good at that.
You know? And I was like, hold on. What have I just discovered? Something so beautiful and mutated. And it's like, yeah, the ska guy and the reggae guy and the like the clown girl and nobody was like, it wasn't a bunch of fucking hipster people, you know? Yeah, but that still happens. But you have to go to somewhere like Arkansas to witness that kind of stuff anymore. Or like Australia or whatever.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Well, there were no rules to being whatever. It was like, yeah. And
but,
you know, like when I was
there still are mutants underground.
I love that
you just
about
have
you.
To fucking
I love that you do that.
Drive
Arkansas,
through the
to
woods
Arkansas,
to find
I'm
them.
Just like, listen, Mom, don't tell anybody I'm home for about 3 days. We're going to watch history documentaries, and then we can go finally see the rest of the family. It's just a big, big family. That's the beauty, is they're always going to be. That's the thing, is like when people are always talking about like being relevant or whatever. And I'm like, who fucking gives a shit? Like it's the biggest waste of time. It's like, okay, I guess. I don't know. I don't really care.
I totally get what you're saying though, because that's like the that's the same way I kind of I look, there's like a lot of geographical privilege in being into this stuff where like, depending on where you're from, depends on how your access was at that point, whereas it's still important. It's still like Nathan's saying, it's still there. It's still relevant to kids. Just the access to it's completely different now. Like you can be a kid and be in a Bikini Kill no matter where you are. It doesn't matter if that was just, you know, your only exposure to it is in seeing it on a soundtrack to a movie or something.
Yeah. And also that's so powerful. It's like, I think about that kind of stuff all the time. I wonder what it's like to be a kid now. I wonder how much of the snobbery can be taken out of it. Like, because back then it was like, I guess, you know, I get this idea that there was this protection of something that you had to protect, that you built, that like you had been treated like shit your whole life and you wanted to protect it. And you know, you were careful about who you let into your circle, you know? And then let's be honest. Punk scenes are full of insane people in the best and worst way. Like, we're not always batting 100. Like, so we're very protective. But I always wonder right now, like now, I'm just like, is it still that way? Is it more open? Is it more, like, are we more, a little more maybe warm, you know?
I think you got to be now, because I think, like you're saying, there's like a, because punk had this natural aversion to authority, and because it was like this little protective thing, there was a lot of weird, sketchy shit that went down that was protected.
Yes.
And I feel like that behavior isn't as protected now. Maybe I'm just being in a very rose-colored glasses kind of way, but I feel
I know what you're saying. Like, we were so, it was so, was the word insular? I'm serious. My vocabulary is
And it's also like, it's an example of like when you're an outsider, let's say you come from a broken home and you're not close to your family, or you don't have a lot of friends and you're a nerd and people pick on you. You find these people that accept you for who you are, and it's fucking beautiful. And you want to protect it. And you're like, damn, these people care about me. And that's a really precious part of all of that to me.
Of course. And you're like, also, you're like, this is my club that, and not club.
Yes. Jesus.
People I found. I worked really hard for this. I went through a lot for this feeling of just love and acceptance and fun and laughter that you're protected.
Yes.
I think what Damien's saying is that because it was so protected and we protected each other so much, a lot of really negative things happened. And then
we revealed ourselves do the good and the bad to each other.
Yeah. There was,
I mean, I think a lot of things went on unchecked. A lot of things went on.
But that's youth, right? Our troubled youth.
Yeah, no, I don't think it has to be. I think that's what
it shouldn't be like that. Yeah, it shouldn't. And hopefully we all grow.
I think youth is changing. I think what
is
changing. And, you know, the idea that there is accountability, there is language that sets boundaries. There is.
Yes.
On like mental health and checking that out and like people knowing if they're all right or not. I mean, I think one of the most insane things about, I think what you're saying about Rose, I don't know, Damien, I don't want to speak for you, but I think that's what you're saying.
Yeah, you're exactly. I'm kind of saying it's like, I feel like now there's a little more accountability, but that.
Yes.
I feel like the mental health piece is newer and that's coming on. And I feel.
Definitely.
I feel like there's a lot of stuff that with drug use or just mental health use and shit that just wasn't.
Drug use. Sex abuse.
Yeah.
You know, I think, yes, drug use, mental health for sure. What's wild, I mean, is that you're talking about that because I've been talking about that with someone recently about how, like, somebody I respect so much and just, like, talking about how we, you know, we are, as a subculture, when we're younger, are what part of what made us creative and work hard and do crazy shit that you'd never do before, and like maybe reckless even. When I'm not just talking about drugs, I'm talking about like things going on, and you know, the way that people saw the world and reacted in the world and like lived, like things that back then you were like, you know, when we're 18, 19, 20, even up to 30 or whatever, and being like, yeah, whoa, crazy times. And then now it's like I'm 43. I'm seeing people still do that. And I'm like, okay, so this was not them being a punk rock kid. This actually is a problem. You know, not a problem. I don't want to say problem. That's not the right word. But this is actually a serious, like, this is a really serious issue that needs to be dealt with. And now, because we are a subculture that attracts personalities and does attract, you know, it can attract a lot of drug abuse, mental illness, because we are dealing with people who are broken or coming from people who, you know, we not only do we like accept and love people with mental illness, but we encouraged it at a time when that's what it was. That's what you did. You were crazy. You know, you were like, like, I'll jump off a bridge.
Yeah, like, crazy.
Just let me finish and I'll done. I'm dead. But it's like, now that we're older, we're starting to be like, oh, wait a minute. We've all stopped jumping off the bridge and going, woo. And these people are still like, you know, doing that, hypothetically speaking, right? Is hypothetically means it's
or metaphorically,
metaphorically speaking. Yeah. What's hypothetical? Yes or no?
Hypothetical is a possibility.
Yeah, possibility. I guess both work.
Okay, yeah. Thank you.
But
I love
yeah. That. But like, I was.
One is I'm like starting just to ask what words mean because I don't want to use words wrong. But yeah, that's the thing about going just to what you're saying about like how, you know, like the how culture has changed. And but we were a place where we did protect people or we encouraged it or whatever. And now 20 years later, we're like, oh, we actually need to worry about this person.
Who I always think about, like,
you know.
Anyway. You know, like if you think about Gigi Allen, right? His fucking parents named him Jesus Christ. That was his real name. Imagine how that just, imagine how crazy it would be if that, you know, like I'm like, is that why he became what he became? Because imagine how much people probably gave him shit for being, his name was Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
That's insane.
There are a lot of people. Jesus in the world, and they're not.
Oh, I know, but his name was literally Jesus Christ was his like proper name, right?
Yeah. Well, I feel like he also they yeah, because they're always like, oh, there was that one acid trip. Someone slipped him acid once, and once again, never dose anybody
like obviously. Sid Barrett was driven crazy because of microdosing acid.
The one hit, right? They said
his name was Jesus Christ too.
Well, his name was Sid, and then he finds out about acid, and he's like, oh, my gosh, this is perfect for me, and then look where that wound up. So,
oh, yeah, no, yeah. You got to be careful with drugs. You have to be careful with drugs.
So much of this, I swear to God, I've done drugs. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm like,
I've never done acid. I've done everything but acid.
I say I've done drugs just because I'm like, oh, yeah, I've done drugs. I was talking to my mom about it the other day, or, you know, a few times I've talked to her about it, and I've just been like, because we're talking about addiction within the family and all these things, and I was like, yeah, mom, the thing is like, I grew up in the, you know, the dare just say no generation and had a legit fear of drugs. Like, I really did. That shit worked on me. Like, really.
Yeah, I've never done acid to this day because I'm too scared of it.
Yeah.
I will say that I recently went to a straight up acid store in Vancouver. It was.
Oh, damn.
You can buy with Interact and or debit. And there was dosages.
Wait, you can do what?
Yeah, you could. And there was also mushrooms for sale there. There was mescaline.
Unchecked?
It was, they checked ID. You had to be over 21.
No. Like, who's looking over that project?
Can I speak to the manager?
I don't feel like I'm dry snitching in any way because I think he's done a lot of public interviews about it. But it's this guy by the name of Dana Larson and amongst other people that are very brave in the fact that they're willing to be on the front line of this thing.
Yes. I just want to say, no. It's not a judgment, but I'm like, do we have people that are going to make sure that people taking that are okay?
He was one of the early dispensary people, cannabis dispensary people in Vancouver. And has always been at the forefront of sort of drug legalization pushes. You can buy coca leaf tea there and coca leaf cola. And, you know, this sounds like I'm doing it.
It's like the old days. Yes. 1920s, it's cold Coca-Cola.
Exactly. My grandpa told me they used to go and buy a Coca-Cola from the gas station and just party on the picnic table.
Yeah.
Yeah, I bet they fucking did.
You party like it's 1929 type thing again.
Yeah, because there was fucking cocaine in that drink.
Yeah. No wonder no one really cared about prohibition in a lot of ways. They're like, yeah, fuck it.
Yeah, no shit. They were like, I grew my own reefer and I'm cooking my own meth. Yeah. That's what always blew my mind in Arkansas.
I know. They're like, they're like, oh, you're sick? Let me prescribe you this heroin mixed with cocaine.
When we were kids, the thing that used to blow my mind, so my parents grew up, and my brother still lives there. My parents grew up in a very small town. I'm talking like, I mean, when they were kids, it might have been 300 people, maybe around that. But now it's 80 people. And I remember as a kid, it was probably around 120 or 130 people. And I remember being like, because remember, we grew up in a dry county. You couldn't buy boots. You know, we didn't have MTV because the college, you know, the Christian College Company cut it out. And then stopped, you know, wouldn't let the local cable company, because back then it was local, carry it anymore. But if you wanted fucking meth, hell, you could buy that shit anywhere. And I remember, because in the town where my parents grew up, you know, and it's kind of like, I consider that my second hometown, really. It's called Georgetown. And I just remember being a kid and being like, what is that? Like, why does it always smell like burnt cotton candy? And because there's no cops, it's like right in the river's end. It's always been a bootlegger's paradise. It's like there's no police. You have to drive a really far away to get there. There's only one road in, one road out. And like it always blew my mind that it was easier to get it was easier to get meth than it was to get booze or weed. It was just like,
well, we lived in a dry county, so it's like, yeah, you want to drive an hour to get beer, or you want to go to the trailer next door and spend $15 on something that'll keep you up for days.
And those are your options. And you're not just that, but there was no age limit. There was no whatever. It was just like, you know, parents didn't know what they were looking at. People didn't know what you're talking about back then. Like, it was like, especially back then, like, this is like the 90s. And I just remember, like, I don't know. I think about that all the time. You know, I was just like, it was so much easier to get drugs. And it's still, it's like now we have a pandemic, and I'm not saying because it's a dry county, but I'm like, you fucking idiots. I'm just like, what are you thinking? Like even as a child being like, well, you did that to your damn self, you big dumb assholes. But
town I live in Arkansas is still a dry county.
Yeah, you live in the county, your county, White County. You're welcome, White fucking County. White County is still a dry county. Lono County is a dry county, isn't it?
You have to go to Cabot to get alcohol.
Is it Cabot? No, so Lono County is in Cabot, I think. Cabot's in Lono County. But yeah, when I went to Olympia for the first time and I saw wine in the grocery store, I was like, what? I was like, listen, mama, you're not the country anymore, honey.
I know. It's like, damn, I can go to the AMPM and get a 40. Hell yeah. Welcome to heaven, bitch.
Oh my God. I remember that time that Elliot Smith was playing at fucking Yo Yo A Go Go. I think I'd lived there for 2 days, and me and Kathy were bound to determine you got arrested for shoplifting gum. And you
yes, and a lung leg shirt.
But the best part was me and Jerry got out of there with like 10 bottles of nitrine.
I got arrested for stealing one piece of bubble gum. One piece of bubble gum.
Yeah, anyway. But I don't know. Yeah, I guess my whole point was about drugs is that, like, back to being punk rock and, like, all that shit and, like, knowing all these people, it's just like now, you know, when we were kids, what you realized was fun or whatever, maybe everybody was doing it, maybe this or that, like, has turned a lot of people, like, it's hard to spot. You know, for me, I know this sounds silly. Sometimes people don't believe me and it makes me crazy. I'm like, I'm a little bit naive, you know, like to shit like that. I'll be like, they were on what? Like for years, I'd be like, there were people who were such assholes to me on the street or whatever. And then I'd see them at a party and they were so nice and they were talking to me. And I was like, oh my God, they were so nice. You're not going to believe it. And then I'd see them on the street again and they were an asshole. And then later somebody was like, bet they're on cocaine. And I was like, what? People are doing drugs? Like, I honestly couldn't believe it. But, I don't know what's right or wrong. I think a lot of people need a lot of different drugs. But I worry, you know, now that we're older and there is, like, mental illness that, like I was saying, when we were young, it was par for the course. We were just kids being idiots. And then not even talking about drugs. I'm just talking about mental illness, you know, like things that felt normal because we were all just a little bit wacky and doing fucked up, wild, crazy shit, fun shit all the time. And now I'm like, oh, like, this, you know, it makes me think of like the 70s or like what people I talk to now who are older than us, like in their 70s and shit. Like, I try to like reach out to them because, like, sometimes I feel like I don't have a mentor or something. You know, like, I feel like I went through a lot of things, you know, with my bandmates and stuff. But I always felt like I'm just like, okay, now we're like now we're, this is happening, A, B, and C, you know, like, has this happened to you? Like, I know, you know, you read the stories that they're in books. It's like classic punk rock stories or this, and then this person died young, you know, and shit like that. And I'm like, hey, was there anything that made you go, I was worried about that person. I wish I would have said this. Or what did you do? Did people talk about it? Like, do you look back on it now and think differently? Like, what would you tell me? Like, what, you know, what would you tell your 40-year-old self? 43, I suppose. What would you tell you?
I mean, Amy Winehouse was more Sid Vicious than Sid Vicious.
Oh, yeah.
It does draw people that need it to it, punk. There's no reason, right? And I think that's why I find both your journeys so interesting.
Maybe damage comes with the territory.
Well, I think so. Like Nicole Panter, I always quote this, but she was on the podcast and she said, hardcore who? Was Nicole Panter, the manager of the Germs. And she's one of the people that started
the Western Civilization and the Pee-wee Herman show.
Yeah, she started, like, she's in decline and, yeah, was one of the people that started Pee-wee Herman show way back when. And she's like, amazing. And she was saying when she was on
sounds
the show.
Sounds terrible. Just kidding.
Yeah, she's sounds, like,
kids, she's amazing.
She's like, punk is people with trauma at times inflicting that trauma on other people to inflict that trauma. But I mean, like, it is people with trauma drawn to it. And it's people and it's people that need it. And I think that's why I think your journeys are so interesting, because it's not the easiest thing to find. And it's not the easiest thing to kind of like get involved with, and especially like you're saying, you're in a dry county where they don't have MTV. Like,
penetrate. I think it was harder to penetrate sometimes for me. But yes, no, you're right. Well, definitely she's right. I'm glad you're talking about her, because like, it's just like I was saying, I'm glad you have that conversation, because like, those are the kinds of words I need to hear. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, that's the kind of shit I need to hear. Like, I'm like,
Iggy Pop slashing himself on stage, Sid Vicious cutting himself up on stage. Like, what is that? That comes from a pace
your
of pain.
Nathan, your podcast list that shows up sometimes is the weirdest thing I've ever heard. It is so weird.
Do I have a list?
You can't. I have missing
teeth. It's probably, well, I have missing teeth now. So
I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying it shows up. It's only in podcasts.
I think it's because of my missing teeth.
I didn't hear it. I didn't notice it at all. So I don't.
You did it? Is it just me?
I think, but you spend a lot more time, so you pick up on each other's foibles a lot more. Like, you, when you're in a band with someone for this long, you know, you pick on people's foibles in a different level. Like, there's
what's a foible?
Like, you know, like people's quirks. F-O-I. I'm bad with spelling. Foible.
Aluminum foible. Okay.
But like, I feel like there's a, you know, like you learn there's an intimacy that comes from being in a band with someone that is not intimacy in any sort of sexual way at all, but I mean like a
it's like a marriage. It's just like a marriage. It's
beyond a marriage.
It lasts longer than marriage.
It's pure sex.
but it's
pure lust.
Pure lust. All I'm doing, I'm looking at him and I'm like, kiss me on the lips again with your lips.
Big things in my mustache. Turns her on.
It is. And you know, it's funny. It's like I've said to so many people, like, you know, Nathan, I voted, you know, said this, like, this is the longest relationship we've ever had. And, you know, like, people are always like, oh, there's what happened? Why weren't you guys together for 12 years? And, you know, what's funny to me is like, it's hard to explain to people and you have to give them a story. That's why I loved in like the podcast with you right now, like the podcast I like this, because I don't really have to explain it. It's like, Well, for me, it was just like people needed a story. You tell them a story and then you're just like, here, take it. Like, but the story is so much more complex than that. It's just like, you know, we had shit to do. We had lives to live. We had people to take care of. People died. People were born. You know, like I never doubted in my mind once if Nathan loved me or if I loved him ever. And then,
well, that's sweet, Beth. Thank you for saying that.
Thank you for hearing that, Nathan. But also,
I love you too.
I love you too, my friend. But also, like, I get really defensive of him too, boy. Woof. Like, I so many times have said, I'll talk to him any fucking way I want to, but don't even try it. Like, I will eat somebody's lunch, but I'll scream at him and it's fine. But like, we've been through a lot together. We've hurt each other. We've said a lot of mean things to each other, have done things to each other. Like, there's something very special about it. And I think that's like being bandmates, but also like, you know, it's a thing, you know, I'm not the punkest person. I never have been. Like, I'm not like, I'm a punk. Like, look at me. Whoa. Like, but, you know, I'd always prefer to crochet and hang out with kids. It just sounds more fun. But like, I think with like, when you just grow together and you've literally, the one person you've seen the entire world with, that's, you know, Nate. That's
and
help.
And we used to work shitty fast food jobs for 6 months, save up money. And we'd be like, here, how about this? Fucking take my hand. Let's go all over the world together. Let's go on this wild adventure. And Beth was like, sure, I'll do it.
Yeah.
And, yeah. You know, people aren't so open to that, but it's like, hey, no. Let's fucking do this thing. Let's go all over the world and go to these places. Let's take a risk. Let's not go to college. Let's work at A&W Root Beer and Subway and McDonald's.
I did. I worked at both of those.
and then let's Nathan leave and go off. Let's go see the world together. I mean, damn, that's beautiful.
Just like with no promises, you know, like it might fall apart. Well, shit, fuck. All right. Like, I think that's what makes it hard now, even as an older person, to be like not with Nathan, is because I think that's part of it. People don't understand that, Damien. I think you'll get that you're just
trust.
Like, trust, and also just being like,
trust takes building. You have to build trust.
And also, like, if it fails, who fucking cares? What does that even mean? It's like, I don't give a shit.
If it fails, we still have each other.
Yeah. And we'll still be doing it somehow. And that's fine. You know, if I have to go work at a daycare and whatever, like, it's fine. It's all right. And it's like, if your label drops you, if whatever happens, it's like, what are you going to do? What can they do to you that's worse than it's already been done to you? And I think it's hard to explain.
Nobody dies when you burn the fries.
Hey, quote my mom. That's my mom's quote. That's Myra's quote. My mom was a nurse she was a nurse's aide. So it's a big difference, but she was for 32 years and then her body couldn't handle it anymore. So the only place she could get a job was McDonald's. And she was like, nobody had ever been even like being rude to her. No one had ever been meaner to her, even taking care of people's sick and dying parents than the people at McDonald's, like the customers. And so she just started saying to people, nobody dies when you burn the fries.
I worked at a McDonald's in Olympia and it was all ex-prisoners and they all had like 3 teardrop cats and they were so fucking mean to me.
Well, maybe you'd die if you burned the fries.
I almost died because I did fucking burn the fries once.
I tell you what though, what was I going to say? Oh, that reminds me. Nathan, you want to hear a really funny story about Nathan, Damien?
Yeah, what's that?
Okay, so
be careful what you say.
What are you talking about? I'm not gonna like what stories do I have about you? I'm like, you're not gonna believe this. Anyway, no, this one time when we were in Olympia, Nathan was a magician at finding random jobs that there's no way I ever would have stumbled upon.
Not a magician, I was a psychic hotline.
That is what I was gonna say. He works for a psychic hotline.
They literally were like, just make shit up.
Imagine calling a psychic hotline and it's Nathan.
No, I'm like, you're going to meet a man with brown eyes. See you later. Thanks for fucking spending $3 a minute with me. Bye.
Hello. but it's a totally different kind of relationship than anything else, because it's not like it's like a marriage. It's like a sibling relationship, but it's also like a creative partnership. It's a business relationship too. It's like this sort of, and it's like you're saying, it's like built on a wish and a promise. Like,
yeah. And not even, it's just like unspoken. Like, no, you know,
you do have to make business decisions together. Like how, you didn't want to put Heavy Cross on the record. I was like, I think we should. It's a good song.
I was like, it's stupid. No, it sucks. I hate it. But we did. And I'm glad we did, because then I got to buy my mom a house. So that was cool. Yeah,
exactly. But like, and I got to buy my mom a house. So yeah, it worked.
Yeah.
You know, when we signed a Sony contract, like a major label contract, I made them put in to the contract that they would buy my mom a double wide. But anyway, she got a brick house, which is much nicer because there's tornadoes and it scares me a lot. So.
Yeah.
Double wide specifically, amazing.
It's yeah, safer. Duh.
It's safer that way.
Double wide.
She got a brick house and it's nicer, and she lives right next door to my sister. And, you know, thankfully, you know, Arkansas is so cheap. But, like, yeah, I did not want to put that fucking song on there. Are you fucking kidding me? I was like, this piece of shit? All right.
Yeah, and I had to talk you into it. That's a business relationship, though.
Yep. Yeah. But I have to say, too, had anyone else tried to talk me into it, I'd have been like, no. No. It would be who it was. I'd have been like, no, but that's the trust thing. But also, like, Nathan has better taste than me. Like, you know, I know that. That's not self-deprecation. That's just like, I don't
care. I don't know about that. I mean, we have different tastes, you know?
Well, I don't know, Nathan. You did put out my favorite new Sensei 7-inch, and you were in Deep Purr.
The first time that Orville Peck sang was on that new Sensei 7-inch.
Yes. I was going to say the first appearance of Orville Peck.
If you need me, I'll be talking about Orville Redenbacher.
I don't know about Orville Peck, but I love Orville Redenbacher.
I love that variety show. That was a good show.
Oh, y'all mean Orville Redenbacher, right?
I have no idea who you're talking about.
Or you know Orville Peck, right? The guy who's got the country music guy, wears the chains in front of his face, kind
of. Oh, I don't know any of his music. I always thought he reminded me of Nathan, because Nathan used to like to do that. I don't know. Is his music good? Their music good? I don't know who they are.
It's kind of blown up. Like, they're very popular. It's kind of country vibe. Like, once again, not really my thing. But Nathan put out the new Sensei, which is the Orville Peck's band that Orville Peck played drums in, and the first time Orville Peck ever sang was on a record that Nathan put out. So there is a connection to Nathan.
Nathan,
new Sensei rules,
amazing band.
Well, y'all haven't met my Sensei yet, Black Veil. Okay.
No, we haven't.
I've got a new Sensei. And he felt me.
I do karate at Curves.
Karate.
A new Sensei felt me. I'm looking for another one.
I.
I don't know. That's the thing, is like, I don't know what you're talking about.
I
listen to only, like, I listen to lots of things, but like, I'm not, that's what I love about being with Nathan. It's almost like somebody's doing all the work for you and be like, thank God, thank you. Just tell me the hits. See you later. Like, I don't have the patience, I think, or something. Like, I just don't.
Our kind of band was like Pussy Galore jamming with Whitney Houston.
Yeah, fucking right. It was Whitney Houston. I guess more like fucking, I don't know. Who's that? What's it like? I don't know. No, fuck, I wish.
Like you said earlier, Beth, you don't really have any peers in this thing, because I think that you changed this thing. Like, the impact you had on punk and DIY punk, and like, you did change the way, I don't know, like, the and it's not.
Are you talking to me or Nathan?
I'm talking to you now. Like, no, honestly, like, you talk to women and non-binary people and men, you know, the impact you had for kicking the door down for me a couple years later when I was taking my clothes off on stage, and all of a sudden I'm in the
you interview. Sexy bitch.
Well, I tell you that we definitely, I think, rode in on the path you blazed.
I wouldn't say, but don't you think though, like, I'm always like, that's a very kind thing to say. Thank you for saying that, for one. I mean that. But like, you know how I always feel that people are saying that, and it's like, again, it's so much nicer to talk to people like you understand. I'm always saying, I was just reflecting the scene I was a part of. You know, like, to me, the most important thing that I could do was, one, I had hoped that someday things would be cooler and different for people, you know, and easier. And two, was just like, I would just wanted to make this scene that I came from kind of proud in a way, Like, I don't know if proud is right, but represent it. You know, I wanted to, I also had this thing for me. It was about, this sounds so dumb. I'm not a peace and love kind of person. In fact, I'm almost, sometimes I'm like, hate is just as important, like in the right context. But like, I'm a little Mo Tucker about it, where I'm like, what's this peace and love shit? But I also feel like, for me, the whole point was kindness and warmth.
You I think know? Punk is radical acceptance.
Yeah. And then, but sometimes I think that can come off kind of hard to penetrate. And I think there was a thing, I just wanted people to feel good. And like, I didn't want people to have that feeling of like, you know.
Acceptance is important.
Yeah. And well, just in warmth, just be kind. Like, I understand when people can't, it's not in their personality. You know, like the other night, like there was a, I'm so weird about shit, and people, I don't think people would know this about me, but like Hannah wanted to do a group hug before we played a show. And I was like, no, that's not my vibe. Like, I was just like, cause I'm in my own head and in my own body, and I'm trying to be out of my body. I'm trying to be like, I'm just trying to do what I need to do. Like, I don't have that same kind of vibe about things. Like, I'm just different. Like, I can't explain it. Like, it can come off kind of cold, but really it's just because I'm in my brain a lot. I'm in my head a lot. And then, you know, I don't know. It's because it's, to me, I just am like, I don't want to think about the show. I don't want to talk about the show. I want the show to just happen, and whatever happens, happens, and great, let's go. And if things fall apart, even better. Like, you know, but like,
even better, even more punk.
I love it so much. Oh, I feel bad sometimes because people hate it. Oh, I love it so much. So I love it so much. Like, I wish.
What you did was, punk rock was an amazing thing, but there was such a, like, especially DIY hardcore in the 90s, there was like such a, like, a asexuality to it, or a loss of sexuality to it.
It was almost Christian.
Very much. Very puritanical. Yeah.
And I think because I'm from a queer scene, well, you know, we went from to Olympia to the queer scene. It was so ramped up sex to the next level. And like, that was part of it for me, was that there was this huge liberation for me coming from Arkansas and coming to that. Also, I, you know, my mom is like the fucking best. Like, she's so cool. And compared to like the conservative South and the conservative Arkansas, especially small towns, you know, my mom was like, you want fucking birth control? Your friends want fucking birth control? I'll take them and get fucking birth control. Let's go. Like, there's no reason why they have to be, you know, it's like, fuck it, whatever. That was my mom. But like, and is my mom. But like, for me, that's what it was. It was like, yeah, because that whole hardcore thing, like when I met boys like that, mostly boys, mostly dudes. And like, I was always too much for them. Like, I just remember thinking like, that's why Riot Girl felt better to me, or like the GZ scene, like people like Fugazi, and like people like, you know, the Makeup, Nation of Ulysses, like bands like that. Like, I was always like, oh, I feel so much more at home in this. Like, I feel like there were other like hardcore bands and stuff that just made me feel like I was like.
Yeah. And like, I love my grandma and my sister, and I'm like, what's wrong with y'all?
Yeah. And yeah. I'm also just like, why are you treating me like, it, you know what it felt like? It felt exactly like, sometimes worse than when we got older. We were in a big, you know, playing these big old festivals, and then it would be like us and then these big rock and roll bands, and those rock and roll bands treat us as exactly the same. And
do you want to tell the Kings of Leon story?
Never, never. I'll tell you that privately.
Okay. Okay. Yeah.
It's a good one. It's a really good one. It's really good. It's really, really fucking good. I'll tell you that privately. I'll text it to you. But like, I always felt like if I ever met Henry Rollins, he would fucking hate my guts.
Well, other night, Lydia Lunch told me that Henry Rollins is a pussy.
I mean, kinda. I mean, I don't know him at all.
I don't know what that means, but that was hilarious.
So here's my dream. I'll leave on this. I have a dream one day. Because he also is always talking shit about fat people. I'm like, fuck you. We can go to the fucking gym like a jock. Fuck off.
He's the Joe Rogan of punk.
Yeah, he is. He's even, I think he's been on Joe Rogan, but I've also been but I do have a dream where he picks me up, but like under my arms, like a baby, and he can't bend his knees, and he just picks me up and puts me in the air and then just puts me right back down. That's my one post-rock dream.
Have fun on your tour, Damien.
I'm not going on tour.
Oh, we're going on tour. Never mind.
You're going on tour. You're going on tour.
Have fun with your actually real stable, beautiful life with your child and your wife.
No, Damien, believe me.
Damien, I'm going to have Moya send you my phone number. Send me pictures. Mm-kay.
Yes, absolutely. Please. And let's talk again soon. Let's set up this follow-up thing. Because we didn't even talk Deep Purr. I love that song so much.
Oh, yeah. The Split with US Girls.
Yeah, that song's sick. But this has been awesome.
It's actually called Us Girls. So anyway. Bye.
Let's talk soon.
Okay. This was so much fun. This was the best interview I've ever. This is the funnest interview I've done ever.
I never want to get off the phone.
Well, it's not over yet. We'll continue this. We'll continue this thing.
It literally still is not over yet. Okay.
Yeah.
Bye.
Yeah.
Bye. Nathan, as we're just talking off air about incendiary performances, that KLF one is an all timer.
Insane. Yeah, it's got to be. I mean, they shot blanks into the audience and then had like dead sheep bodies, and they were with extreme noise terror. I mean, what?
They were like there's certain bands when like they get incredibly popular, like it makes sense. There's like a reason why this band becomes popular. But there's like other bands where you're like, this is like a glitch in the Matrix, and the KLF.
Yeah, they actually like refuse to follow the societal norms of what it takes to climb the way they climb down the ladder on purpose.
Yeah.
Thrilling.
Cause it's like, it's kind of the opposite of what most people do when they get into the music, or what motivates most people in the music industry.
Yes, exactly. And that's fascinating. Like, did you ever hear that story about how, you know, that guy Aphex Twin, I think it was a band called Jesus Jones, wanted him to do a remix for him, and the manager came over and he just gave him the first blank CDR he could find with like some random song on it and handed it to him. And Madonna asked him to do a remix, and he said he would if she would get on all fours and squeal like a pig into a microphone.
Oh my God. There's definitely like a vibe.
What is this, like this art prankster stuff I enjoy, you know? It's like art pranksters that get famous and they just troll the world.
Yeah. Like there's a sort of to just get to that position and have that, okay, I don't give a fuckness about the entire experience. Just be willing to like blow it up for yourself is just, there's a bravery to that.
I mean, it's probably like self-destructive and negative, but it's highly entertaining. You don't see that anymore. People are so ready to capture the bait and go with it and do what everybody else tells them to do.
Well, because it's just like there's stakes to everything now. Because Because everything's monetized, right? Like everything can be converted into some sort of currency, be it social media currency or be it actual physical, you know, cash currency or maybe digital.
And don't you
cash
think
currency.
We're so quick now to give up on somebody if they make one mistake or they do something, like if an artist does something nobody likes, they're done for. You know, it's like labels used to like allow bands to organically grow and change and go through phases. Now it's like if you make one mistake, you're out of here, you're done. There's not enough, you know, there's too much at stake now.
Yeah,
maybe.
I don't know. Like it's interesting, and you've weathered this storm more than I've ever experienced it. Like being on a major label now versus then, where there it feels like now. I don't know what is like that experience like to be inside that thing. Like is there pressure that's like different than when you were on independent labels earlier on?
Yeah, I think I think we've been really lucky to like, they let us do whatever we want, actually. Like they let us design the merch and make stuff that we want to. And some of it's maybe controversial and they're cool with it. But yeah, the press and all that stuff is we just did this press tour and I was like, oh man, Beth's doing like 9 interviews a day. And oh God, it's like, I mean, I can't complain. We're we're lucky and blessed to have this situation in our lives, and we make a living from our art. That's amazing. But yeah, the major label thing is interesting. It's, but they're cool with us. I mean, they allow us to really be ourselves, which I don't know. I thought there'd be more of a backlash from the label towards us, but they've been cool. And so, you know, it's like, it's interesting.
Yeah. Like we talked about it before. Like there's certainly fuckery that happens on the independent level with labels. And so,
oh yeah. I mean, indie labels are not all good either. No. They're not all like upright, you know, businessmen or whatever, are business people trying to help their artists. I mean, we had incidences where we were on an indie label, and me and Beth were living together working at McDonald's. And I went to the label. Maybe I shouldn't say the name of the label, but I went to the guy who's running it. And I was like, you know, do y'all even owe us like $100 for all these 7 inches and records we sold? And he just picked up a piece of paper off his desk. The first one he could find. I was like, no, you're in debt. See you later. Like,
yeah. Yeah. Well, it's interesting. I had a conversation with someone recently on the podcast, and it was, you know, he was kind of adamant that people shouldn't expect to make a living off punk or from this music. And I was like, maybe that's true, but there's certainly people on the label side and people on the booking side of these shows and people on, you know, the selling you gas for your van side that all expect to make a living off this thing. So
yeah.
There are people clearly that are able to make a living off this thing.
Yes, absolutely. And it's wonderful to be able to do so. And I think however that can manifest for a band, I think if you feel all right with it and you can do it with a good conscience and you're able to be free in yourself, then I say go for it.
I was talking to Chris Shiflett from the Foo Fighters, and Noise for a Name, not to undersell that part of his career, but I was like, do you think Noise for a Name could have gotten to that sort of next stage if you guys had been on a different label, or you know, circumstances have been slightly different? I was like, you know, not the Foo Fighters level, but you know, just like that kind of like next stage of success or whatever, commercial success, I mean. And he's like, oh my god, no. He's like, we didn't have the ethic, like the drive it takes to be a band at this level is ridiculous compared to being a band at that level.
Yes, totally. Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I think I always think about how wasn't it such a fascinating time in the 90s when like the Boredoms got signed to Warner Brothers.
Yes.
Because of like their connections to Sonic Youth and Nirvana, and like, you know, that's interesting. That was an interesting time. I think that was a nightmare for a lot of bands because like labels were like, here's a 7-record deal or whatever. But you know, it seems like, I don't know, it seems to me like more risks could be taken and people would enjoy it. It does to me, you know, like.
It's funny because like, there's this sort of, I don't know, it's like nobility in the idea that you like shun the commercial opportunities that represent your band and you stay pure to it. But there's a life cycle to your band on an independent level as well, where people are going to get sick of what you're doing. And if you don't kind of expand that fan base, and I'm not even talking to like to make money level, I'm talking just to like have people like engage with your art.
Yes.
There's going to be a point where you're just not really playing to anyone anymore.
Yes, totally. Yeah, there's a cap. There's like a cap on it.
Yeah, and that's like the reality. So like even these bands that it didn't work out, and I don't mean anyone that got really screwed over, but at the same time, like if you had that opportunity to kind of take a swing at it, you got to experience being in a band at that sort of highest level for even a moment. It's like, well, there's a triumph in that too.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah. And I think it's different for every group, and depending on, you know, what the members want to do with themselves and their life and how dedicated they are to the art and the touring. I mean, it's not easy. You fucking have to basically tour yourself to death, you know? And it's like, but it's interesting to me how, just because the indie label is indie doesn't mean it's ran well or ran in a way that's honest. And the same is true for major labels, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've never been on a major label. I think our name precludes us from ever experiencing it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, parental advisory forever.
Yeah, but being on Beggars was kind of like, I feel like a little bit of a taste of it for us.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And just how many people are working on a record, or how many people are just involved in this. And it's just, it's amazing, because it is like, it is an industry. And that's, and I mean that in the sense that there's people that are doing this because they love music and they want to find a job in it. And so they expect to make a living off it. So I can completely understand why it works the way it does.
Yes. It's very interesting. It's like, I've had some run-ins with some of the bands that I released on my label, Fast Weapons, my little crappy punk label, where they left the label and like got signed by a much bigger label, and they would like, they reissued the record without my permission. Whoops. and it broke the band up, and they wrote me and they're like, we are so sorry for leaving you behind, and we took a chance on this bigger label and it's ruined our careers, and they don't even want to play music ever again.
Yeah.
And it's like, damn, that fucking sucks. When the labels, like when a label's like, what a label does to a band makes it so they never want to play music again. That's like, that's terrible. When you have such a bad experience with a label that you're like, I'm done with music, I'm going to go into another career.
Well, that's, and it's, but it's,
but you could have a joyful experience with a really small indie label that's not able to give you much money and just maybe give you some copies for merch. And it's like the camaraderie of it and the positivity of it. But then you get on a bigger label where there's like lots of money thrown around, but it's such a negative experience. You're like, fuck this, I'm done, I'm never playing music again.
Well, it's interesting because like I talked to Matt from Piss Jeans recently, and
and
the guys from Paint It Black as well, and both of them, both bands kind of never went full time with it. Like never went, like took that plunge to rely on this thing.
Piss Jeans is great.
Amazing band. Amazing.
Yeah.
Band.
Amazing. Amazing. Yes.
And I find it interesting how different their relationships are to their bands, and I guess music in general, because of the fact that they never sacrificed themselves to try and do this full time. And I say this as someone who did, and it really does kind of affect the way you engage with it afterwards, forever afterwards.
Yes, it, yeah, it does, depending on how traumatizing mm-hmm. the time it is, you know. But it's interesting that you can have a great experience with a small label that doesn't offer much monetarily and financially, and but you're all in it together. The camaraderie, the support, the love is kind of like a currency of its own, that even when you're on a bigger label with lots of money being thrown around, it can be a terrible experience, you know.
Yeah,
that's interesting to me.
Well, you say you ran a shitty little label. You got some great releases on it, and
thank you. Yeah, it was a great run. I enjoyed it very much. Starting a new label now where I think I'm going to put out Arkansas underground music.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, like, does it predate you guys moving up there? Like, are there releases before, I guess, maybe even you adopted the name
Fast? Oh, Weapons? Yeah. When I was 17, I started a label called You Thrill Like a Girl in Arkansas, and I put out Beth's first band on a tape, and I put out my high school punk band on a tape.
Whoa.
Yeah, I would love to get you a copy. If I can find one, if I can find them, I'll mail them to you.
Oh, I love to hear this stuff. Yeah,
Beth's band was called Little Miss Muppet. And my band was called Miss Garrett, like the woman from Facts of Life. Yeah, we were like tried to be like the Minutemen or something, kind of, you know.
Well, that's why I really wanted to have you back on, because I'm really intrigued about the stuff that you guys were involved in scene wise prior to moving out west. Because
oh yeah, we started a punk scene in Arkansas, a little one, and I got Dub Narcotic Sound System to come down and play. I tried to set up a show for the Murder City Devils, and they just drove past the town and were like, we're not playing there. See you later. And we were like, you know, it's so it was cool. It was fun, you know, and Beth was, we were fucking teenagers, you know, and it was like 10 of us, but we had the time of our lives, and it's a very beautiful moment.
Because you mentioned finding that Thrasher magazine and hearing about the Frumpies and starting to write and going from,
yeah,
from there. But like, was there any semblance of a punk scene? Because I know like in Little Rock,
Little Rock had a great punk scene. And I got to go to some of those shows, you know, and I saw Universal Order of Armageddon, you know, I mean, there was lots of fucking great shows in Little Rock. And man, a bunch of people died, fentanyl overdoses, various things.
Yeah,
kind of killed the underground here. And it's starting up a little bit. We're doing I work with a friend who has a house and we call it the Parasite Garage, you know, like the Paradise Garage, but mm-hmm. the Parasite Garage. And we're doing house shows and punk shows and noise shows there. So there's some building and there's a cool, vibrant youth community. But yeah, it used to be amazing in Little Rock in the 90s and 80s, you know. Unwound and Nation of Ulysses and all those bands would come through here and play these like tiny little fucking shows. And, you know, I think the people that saw those shows were changed forever.
Cause there's I guess this is pre that, but like, there's like Sobering Consequences and Econochrist and Trusty.
Yeah. Yes. Trusty. Trusty went from Little Rock to DC to be on Discord.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, yeah. Econochrist. Amazing.
Unbelievable. Oh my God. Yeah, one of the greatest of all time.
File 13 was an incredible Arkansas label.
File 13. Okay. I don't even know that.
Look up File 13. That's really great stuff. Yeah, there was a really vibrant scene here in the 90s, late 80s, and it just kind of just dissolved.
Well, like you said, the one thing that I guess we talked about it last time too, it's like trauma is this sort of reoccurring part of
punk. Oh yeah.
And mm-hmm. and I get the opioids are from the beginning, yeah. right? Like I know
the drugs are the brutal part, I think. You know, it's like if y'all could just, I'm like, how about this? You know, you want to drink some beers? All right. How about nobody do any drugs? You know, it's just too easy to fall into that trap, especially these, you know, yeah. Like we talked about, punk people are usually traumatized, isolated, loners, apt to just self-destruction and addiction.
And it's also a very self-aware genre in the way that it like self-mythologizes.
Oh yeah.
And because of all these sort of tragedies that get romanticized almost as they're internalized into the mythology.
It all reminds me too much of that fucking Neil Young, you know, it's better to burn out than to fade away. I'm like, can we reverse that?
Yeah.
Can we say it's better to fade away than to burn out?
Yeah.
At least everybody stays alive. God.
Yeah.
You know,
100%. It's,
I hate the rock and roll star, Ian Curtis, Kurt Cobain. Oh, it's so romantic they died. Like, why do people have to why does everybody have to fucking die? You know, like, can't we enjoy it while it's here? Why do we have to romanticize this art and pain connection? And I think that it is true, but I don't think it has to be true.
Yeah, it's almost like this, like, And excuse the over-sexual side of this metaphor with this, but it's like almost like this emotional edging where people want to get as close as they can to a tragedy without actually experiencing the tragedy.
I wonder about that. Is it because normal people, okay, I use that term loosely, but you know, okay, let's say like normies, people who don't necessarily play music or have creative outlets and they work 9-to-5 jobs, but they love music and they want to find a part, they want to so connect with this thing and they're okay with like living through others' tragedies and not having them on their own. So they don't, you know, it's interesting to me. I don't understand why that is.
Well, I think you're there too. Like I feel the same kind of thing with that because it's like, there's this, but it's not even just normies. Like, I think it's until you experience this tragedy up close and know what it's like. Because that's the thing about these murder podcasts or these.
Oh, yeah, I know.
You don't actually get to feel like what it's like to be the family around these people that die.
I think what some people say, what, they don't have haunted houses in third world countries.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's like, when you have the pain already, You don't want to go in the haunted house. You don't want to fucking, what are these like regular ass people who've never had any trauma in their lives are like, let's go to an escape room and be locked, fake kidnapped.
Yeah.
What is up with that? This American, like, we're so hungry for danger.
I think it's, it's in the music side, the way it manifests is this sort of internalized continual self-destruction in the name of just like being part of this sort of history. Like,
But it's like, look at you, you know, you've got kids, a wife, a beautiful family. You're still making music. You're still writing about and talking to people about punk and interesting, dangerous stuff. And you're not over there fucking cutting yourself and getting high.
Well, I'm definitely getting stoned, but
well, yeah, but you know what I mean. It's like,
but I know what you're saying. Exactly.
You're not turning it up to fucking 10, and you're still balancing like what could be considered like a fruitful, beautiful, sweet, nice, quiet life with all of these other little what could be seen as like dangerous elements, and able to balance that. Like, I think that's interesting, and I think more people should do that and attempt to do that, not be afraid to ride life in its beauty, its quietness, and embracing like family and love and themselves, and also remaining with one foot on the edge without knowing to fall over, you know?
Well, I feel like I just like won the weirdo lottery in a way.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Oh yeah.
I
it's wonderful.
Exactly. And I found the one place where a guy like me could kind of be like a person like me could be normal in a way.
Yes, totally. And that's good. You know, it's like, I think people also forget about like punk people, you know, it's like we come from like sometimes broken homes, broken families, you have trauma and abuse in your life. And you're like, there can be a longing for like a quiet, simple life. You know, like I was married for a while to a woman. She passed away, unfortunately, but we had four beautiful years together. And we lived quietly in this town in Arkansas, and we just, you know, watched movies and went out to eat. And man, I was like, this is the life.
Yeah.
You know, out of all the chaos and the craziness of music, being a musician and touring and throwing everything away to follow this dream, like out here I was living with this woman for a few years in this quiet little town in Arkansas where we'd like go to the Waffle House and go watch a movie and go to bed early. And I was like, damn, this is actually beautiful.
Again, I'm so sorry about that. And like you said, like I think there's a quest for family that a lot of us are on when we come to punk. And
totally, it's like a gang, right? It's like you join a gang. It's like my kids join gangs because of broken families. I think that punk is very similar. It's like instead of the Crips and the Bloods, you put on a leather jacket and combat boots, and that's your uniform, and those are the people you belong to, and you fucking fight and die for each other. And
yeah, and I always go this overstretched thing about it being a religion, but it winds up what god you wind up worshiping in.
Yes.
Which path you can take, because there's like a lot of people that wind up worshiping Johnny Thunders or this myth of Johnny Thunders.
Totally, yes. It's bad to worship the myth of a person, I think. You know, that seems unhealthy to me. Yeah, because you're like, you're basing it all on a possible mythology and the most negative aspects of a person's life. I don't know. Hopefully we can move to a point where that stuff's not even seen as cool at all anymore. You know, like, maybe we can move beyond that.
Yeah, it's weird because, like, I feel like it's all tied together in a way. Like,
it is.
I've been reflecting a lot on my relationship to Sonic Youth as of late.
They're the best.
Exactly, and they're the band that got me into punk.
Yep. They played a big role. They got me into no wave and to like art.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Like the stuff exactly. They were like, them and Propagandhi were the two groups that, like, finding them just kind of opened up worlds to me in what they were talking
totally.
About. Exactly. And with thinking about Sonic Youth, I've been kind of reflecting on that time in my life. You know, my parents had split up, and my dad had moved away, and my mom was with this not so great stepfather.
Yeah.
And looking at Kim Gordon and Thurston Moore as being this idealized version of love. Mm-hmm.
Yes, I know. Well, he fucking blew it.
Well, and then that's the thing. It's like I, when that happened, the level of emotional investment I had in someone else's relationship was incredible because it hurt me to my very core because that had
become, me too.
You know, like exactly. Like it becomes like a family in a way.
Yeah.
And unhealthy.
Oh, you know, yeah. We don't know that everybody's story. And we it's probably wrong to idealize that, you know, because you don't know the story and what happens. But,
well, like you're saying,
but
like,
I felt the same way when Kim and Thurston broke up. I was like, damn, love is dead.
Yeah. And it's like what you said, because we're worshiping these idols and
exactly, yes,
we're looking for this family and we're filling that void with these people. Like,
that's right.
Which I get, like, and religion does that for other people.
Totally. Yes. Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think you have to be careful about making people seem perfect, right? I mean, we know if you're an adult, you know, life's not perfect. We make mistakes. We blow it. You have to have forgiveness sometimes. And, you know, it's like, it's insane to expect. That's what punk is. I think punk is a really, that's a part of punk that I've always loved is like perfection is not, what if perfection is not real? Mm-hmm. You know, like what if things are sloppy and messy, but you choose to stick with it or not, you know?
Well, that's what it's like. The best thing about it is because it's a, it doesn't require perfection. So
yep.
You can just build it yourself. It doesn't matter how good it is. Like you can literally just be standing on stage, screaming out lyrics at an audience with no music behind you. And it's still valid in punk. Like John Cooper Clarke had hits doing that.
Yeah. John Cooper Clarke. That's right. And the no wave bands where they're just like, there are, you know, like we're not going to play any fucking notes and make up gibberish lyrics. And, but they believed in what they're doing and they gave it their all. And it's the same way in like relationships. I think you don't know what it's going to be like. You choose to love, you choose to accept somebody and it's going to be messy and sloppy. Maybe you might make some mistakes, but you stand behind it. You believe in it. And that's like powerful, I think.
Yeah, it is. It is very powerful. And it does. It's what makes this unique to anything else.
I agree. Way. Yeah, I think so too. Because it's about the expression, the catharsis, the artistic desire to show the world something that's inside of you. It's very metaphysical. It's interesting. And it was such a beautiful movement and it still rings through the world today. I wish there was more of it, but we're in a different world now. You know, we're in such a corporate landscape that sometimes it's like the, I can imagine for some of these young kids growing up now, it'd be hard to imagine, you know, everything's about going viral and everything's transactional and it's a different landscape. But there always will be renegades. There will always be pioneers. There'll always be art pranksters. There'll always be punks lurking in the shadows in some format, in some genre.
Well, I think that's why that Deep Purr song hit me so hard when I heard it, like which we talked about on the last episode briefly towards the very end, but or the last part of this episode, I should say, that because it was just like it hits so hard, and it's such a minimal song.
Thank you, thank you. Yeah, I recorded it in a hotel, I think, and yeah, that was a reflective song on like popularity and school, and you know, sometimes you know, I'm so not nostalgic about my past, and I meet some kids that I grew up going to school with, and they just long for the past. They long for the time when they were popular in high school. And it's like, damn, if you hit the pinnacle of life at that point and it's all downhill after that, that's a curse.
Yeah. And I feel
it's
like
having a midlife crisis early.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. 100%. And like, there are some kids that you meet that just never get over that high school thing. But the most interesting people were the kids that were like not the cool kids in high school.
Yeah, I think, well, I mean, again, don't you think that hardship and like suffering breeds character and makes you a more interesting person? I mean, it's not fun, it's not pleasant at the time, but maybe there's opportunity for growth and you can see beyond this shitty 3D matrix of what everybody else is telling you matters. You know, you can sort of escape that by bristling up against, you know, authority figures and questioning things. I mean, I think that's can potentially be a powerful thing.
Yeah, and it's like a, for, and this was like an escape hatch from all of that.
For
like,
totally.
And this was the thing about it. Well, anytime you got to come back on here, and we got to talk more of this stuff, my friend. Because
yes, we need to have Beth. We need to get Beth on again. We'll talk more in depth. Absolutely, man. This is wonderful talking with you.
Thank you, Nathan and Beth, for coming on the show. And you're right there. We got plans in the future to do more. And so it will happen one day. In the meantime, check out Real Power. Check out the Gossip on Tour. Check out Nathan's stuff that he does on his own. Check out that Deep Purr record, Split with US Girls, if you can find it. That thing is fantastic. And that is it. That was fun. I really enjoyed doing that episode. And that's it. I guess we got one of those punk rock bowling episodes coming up on the Friday. It's a big one. It's a good one. And we got oh my gosh. I don't want to say what's coming up. We're on a run. We're on a run. Stay tuned. But that's it for the show. Remember, as always, Black Lives Matter. The lives and issues faced by Indigenous peoples all over the world matter. We need to protect trans kids and help trans people protect themselves and their rights and stop hate and violence toward people of different faiths, different races, different identities, different nationalities. Because this is not political. This is just basic human rights stuff. Politics is something completely different. People deserve to be able to live free from hate and violence and discrimination. Ceasefires aren't political. Just basic human rights. People deserve to not have to worry about dying when they go about their day-to-day lives. So if there's organizations in the world that are affecting positive change that you feel could use your support, get involved. They would definitely probably appreciate it. They definitely will appreciate it. Donate your time. Donate your money. Speaking of, if you have money. You don't have to donate money if you don't have money. Time or support. There's lots of ways you can support. Speaking of things that need support, punk gets better when you get involved. Start a band, start a fanzine, start a podcast. Start something. You'll feel better once you contribute to this thing. And speaking of feeling better once you contribute to something, sign your organ donor cards, because by the time they come looking for those organs, you don't need them anymore. It's literally dead weight at that point. So why not just give that to someone else? And I've seen the miracles they can perform. And speaking of seeing things with my own eyes, try meditating, because I didn't believe in it. And my gosh, it's changed things for me. My leg is still a lot in pain. If you've been listening to the last few episodes, I've been dealing with this leg pain thing. People have been asking me about it. So just give you a little update. Yeah, the leg is still very much in pain. But the meditation has helped with that. And that's it for me. Thank you for listening, and I will see you on the next episode. It's punk rock bowling time. That's right, for the 24th year, one of the greatest festivals on earth, in my opinion, returns to downtown Las Vegas the weekend of May 25th, 26th, and 27th. I have had some of my greatest times playing this thing and just hanging out of this thing. You want to know how much this festival speaks to Turned Out of Punk's mindset? The headliners are Devo, Descendants, and Madness. Every day of this festival, the lineup is stacked with amazing bands of all types and stripes of punk and hardcore from all different eras, from ska to post-hardcore. We're talking like Bratmobile to Rock from the Crypt to Stiff Little Fingers to the Cosmic Psychos to Scowl to Chad. And then there's also all these late night after shows which are happening. And you wouldn't believe the lineup of these things, from the Zeros to Agnostic Front. And everything in between. This festival is out of control for fans of punk. So I hope I will see you there. Because this isn't like some sort of festival that you just go to and the bands are secluded in some sort of backstage area. Bands and fans and just punks alike are all just taking over downtown Las Vegas. So you turn around and all of a sudden you're gambling beside John Doe from X. I don't know if John Doe gambles, but if you turn around on the buffet line, you'll probably see me. And you better believe we're going to be talking about punk music. And because this festival loves this podcast as much as this podcast loves this festival, Punk Rock Bowling is bringing you a series of special episodes. So each and every week, I will have an episode going up featuring someone that's playing this festival, and hot damn, are there some good ones coming. Head over to punkrockbowling.com and hopefully I see you in downtown Las Vegas, May 25th, 26th, and 27th.